Ladies and gentlemen, 7 o'clock on a Saturday night, and as usual, that means it's time for the other podcast. I'm your host, Robert Stacy McCain.
And I'm not. I'm the other guy on the other podcast. Hi, folks. It's John Hogue here, and I hear in the background for all the way from Valdosta, Georgia. How you doing, Diana?
I'm great. I'm great. How are you guys?
Ah, the lovely Diana joins us. Folks, if you want to see my good friend John Hogue's blogging, that appears daily at HogueWash.com.
Meanwhile, over at TheOtherMcCain.com, you suspiciously might expect to find blogging by Mr. McCain. You can also find him at other many fine spots about the interwebs, most notably the American Spectator.
Yes, and it's a football Saturday, and so I have to give a big shout out to Roll Tide, Alabama 52, Texas A&M 4, other scores around the country. North Carolina 24-16 over Boston College. Cincinnati 28-7 over South Florida. Oklahoma State 47, Kansas 7. Right now, in the fourth quarter, nearing the end, SMU is leading Memphis 30-27. Florida beat South Carolina 38-24. TCU beat number 9 Texas 33-31 in Austin. Tennessee defeated Missouri 35-12. North Carolina State 30 over number 24 Pittsburgh 29. At kicking off at 7:30 tonight, it's the Auburn-Georgia game at Athens, between the hedges there, while number 11 UCF, University of Central Florida, which has come from nowhere to be a major competitor, will be hosting Tulsa. And a little bit of home news here, my alma mater, Jacksonville State University, Jacksonville, Alabama, home of the Fighting Gamecocks. Go Big Cocks! Are you laughing, Diana?
Yes.
But we're very proud of our Cocks, who today they opened up a 14-0 lead over Florida State at Florida State in the first quarter. At the half, it was Jacksonville State 21, Florida State 14. It is currently in the fourth quarter with about 10 minutes left to play. 34, Florida State 34, Jacksonville State 24. They trail by 10, but this is Florida State, okay? And so
that's all right. Vanderbilt plays LSU tonight in Baton Rouge. So I have a feeling that's a foregone conclusion.
Oh, man, man, man. But I'm just very happy about my Gamecocks down there in Tallahassee, teaching them to fear the beak, which is our hashtag there. So anyway.
Diana, you never seem to talk about the football from your school.
To be honest, which my alma mater, SF State, the Gators.
What is your alma mater?
Well, I didn't graduate, remember, but I attended San Francisco State University.
Oh, that is a weird school, man.
Yeah.
Tell me about it. I survived it. I'm not going to say that I anything except that.
Yeah,
that was a anyway, here at VSU, to be honest, I don't actually know at this exact instant. I haven't seen anything, and usually, heaven knows, Blazer football is a huge thing here. I have not heard a peep about football. And well, considering that Valdosta is a football town, I'm a little surprised.
Well, yes. But you know, the big story today actually had nothing to do with football. It was a health story. The president has got COVID.
He's got the row, as they say. Yeah.
The Rona.
Yeah, he come down with the Rona. Yes, as a matter of fact, on Thursday, late Thursday, it was announced, and President Trump announced it himself, that he and the First Lady had tested positive for COVID-19, tweeting out in the wee hours, "We will begin our quarantine and recovery process immediately. We will get through this together." This happened after it was the first news was that a very close aide to the president, Hope Hicks, longtime assistant, had tested positive for the thing after exhibiting symptoms earlier in the week. And because she had traveled on Air Force One, this you know, immediately raised concerns. And so yesterday, we all saw, you know, President Trump board Marine One to go to Walter Reed Army Medical Center in nearby Bethesda, Maryland.
Yep. The old Walter Reed Hospital is being torn down, the one that was just up Georgia Avenue. And basically all the military facilities, medical facilities in the D.C. area are being concentrated at what used to be Bethesda Naval Hospital.
Right.
They've also moved the medical school of the armed forces into the same facility. It's really quite impressive.
Oh, the media has been, it's horrible. And by the way, folks, you mentioned that I write at The Spectator, and I didn't even have time to blog about this week. I was so consumed with this stuff. But over at spectator.org, I had a post called, and I'm looking for it. Yeah. America's Chris Wallace problem, about how bad Wallace was as the moderator of this week's debate. And
that's all right. They've got Steve Scully to replace him for the next debate.
That'll be former Biden intern. Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyways, yeah. But the thing is that Wallace on this COVID thing, they had him on like five times on Fox News yesterday to go on there and just mask shame President Trump, I guess you would say.
God, really?
Oh, it was horrible. And you know, I couldn't watch it. It's just unwatchable.
Actually, what was unwatchable was this morning in front of Walter Reed, when the military doctors were making a report to the press about the president's medical condition. That was just amazing.
Oh, and the press corps was just like heckling these people.
Well, I mean, the night before, just before I went to bed, I put up a post at Hogwash about the stuff I was beginning to see on social media and a few blog posts about the fact that this conspiracy theory that the White House is lying to us about the president's medical condition. And, you know, the president's physician is a commander in the United States Navy. And the president is being treated at Walter Reed Medical Center, which is a military hospital. Now, given the fact that it's a court-martial offense under Article 107 of the Uniform Code of Military Justice for a member of the armed forces to make a false official statement with the intent to deceive anyone, that I'm going to believe that even if I didn't trust Commander Conley as a responsible physician, you know, there's enough stuff hanging over his head that and those other military docs that they're going to be truthful about this. So to get to the point of the post I had last night, considering all that, my question to the people who are making these assertions and the people who've been running off at the keyboards on Twitter this afternoon is, considering that you're potentially accusing these people of committing a crime, do you have evidence for the stuff you're saying, or are you making it with a reckless disregard for the truth?
A reckless disregard for the truth. This is
it's a term of art.
Yeah, it is a legal term.
Among us people who do journalism, it's a term of art as well because of the legal consequences.
Yes, yes. You cannot, thou shalt not write with a reckless disregard for truth.
Stacy, have you ever been sued for defamation?
Yes, I have.
Did you lose?
No, I didn't.
Why didn't we win that case? Because we told the truth.
Right, right. Anyway, speaking about the truth, California.
Oh, yes. I have the next thing on the list here on the script is Californication.
Yes. I'm both John and Diana are former residents of California, or as I have come to call it, Zimbabwe, USA.
Actually, I felt more like an inmate, but go ahead.
Yeah. Zimbabwe, USA, the People's Republic of California, about a decade ago, back 2009, as it were, I began comparing California to the kleptocratic regime of Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe.
Getting close to defamation there against Zimbabwe, by the way.
Yeah. The thievish, parasitical mentality of liberals who view taxpayers only as a source of plunder eventually runs head on into economic reality. Capital is portable, and predatory governments will eventually cause disinvestment as investors seek opportunities elsewhere. As investment flees, private sector employment stagnates and declines, and smart young people leave to find some place where they have a chance to get ahead.
Smart middle-aged people start to leave.
Yeah, and well, the thing is that back, you remember that they had to they ran a recall against Governor Gray Davis, and that was successful. He was so bad. Gray Davis was so bad. And then they brought in Governor.
But his hair was perfect.
Oh, yes.
Well, so Gray is the current Davis. Governor Hair Gel.
Yeah, well, anyways yeah. But what followed after that was Arnold Schwarzenegger – desperately trying to fight against, the legislature, which is controlled by the Public Employees Union. And
they now have a supermajority in both houses.
Right. Anyways, for 8 years, Arnold Schwarzenegger tried to hold back the tsunami. But then they brought in 2011, Jerry Brown, as governor of California. And after
The return of Jerry Brown.
Yes, the return of Jerry Brown, a fossil from the 70s, Jerry Brown. And that seems to – his tenure as governor seems to have been the straw that broke the camel's back. And once that happens, the collapse accelerates. And so the reason I was writing about that this past week is – that Ben Shapiro announced that he and his company Daily Wire will leave for Tennessee. They're moving up and actually moving their headquarters to somewhere near Nashville, I believe. I believe it's Brentwood.
Brentwood is literally the city limits of Brentwood and the city limits of Nashville are butt.
Yeah.
At the county line.
All right, then. Well, anyways... what he says on that, and I urge you to read the whole thing, is that he said California is not on a trajectory toward recovery. It is on a trajectory toward oblivion. Taxpayers are moving out. Now, including my family and my company, in 2019, before the pandemic and the widespread rioting and looting, out-migration from California jumped 38%, rising for the seventh straight year. That number will increase again this year. And so people are, and what happens when this happens, when this Zimbabwe-type situation happens, and it can happen at the city level or the state level or the national level, but when these parasites, regimes, take over, these kleptocratic regimes like you've got in California, what happens is good people move out. Good people leave. The bad people stay, and it becomes a magnet for the situation with the homeless.
Well, we have Diana online. She's a recent escapee.
You do.
Why did you leave?
Oh God, why didn't I leave? I've told this story a lot. It was in March of 2018. I got off my train from after my hour and plus of sitting on a very uncomfortable train. And in the plaza at Caltrain, there were screaming crazies. I caught my bus. I got off the bus at on Kearney. And I'm walking Kearney, and there are screaming crazies. I walk down Bush Street. Screaming crazies. I turn onto Montgomery, the Tourette's guy who screams obscenities at the top of his lungs. Oh, and Flugelhorn guy. That's a San Francisco legend, by the way. Are playing. Flugelhorn guy is beating hell out of Ode to Joy. And I get into the office and I sit down at my desk and I realize I can't do this anymore. Literally, I realized I can't do this anymore. There are encampments on the sidewalk on Montgomery Street at between Post and Sutter. Frighteningly dirty, crazy people everywhere.
Now, you're in Northern California. This is San Francisco you're describing.
This is San Francisco I'm describing. I lived in San Jose. One morning we're out walking the dogs and we look up and there is a naked woman running across the hillside. Don't ask me why. I have no idea. To get to the train station, as we're driving down to the train station, there are encampments on either side of the street, pallets burning on the sides of the streets. It's literally like being it's worse than the third world. In the third world, they don't waste anything because they can't afford to. It is incredibly filthy and dangerous and frightening. The prices are insane. I went to Iceland in 2017. I was the only person on that tour who was not shocked by the prices because it's like, oh, Yeah, this is pretty much what I pay for anything in the Bay Area. The dirt, the prices, the insane taxation, and the politics are utterly insane. If you're a Republican and a conservative and a gun owner, you are your King Canute standing against the tide crying for it to turn back.
Well, yeah, when I left California, when Connie and I left in 1990, we were Republican gun owners, and we were in Orange County in Southern California. We had been in Ventura County for 4 years, in Orange County for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And in both places, actually being Republicans and gun owners, we were in the majority. But we could see that changing, and that was one of the reasons why we mm-hmm. left California. Now, to give you a for instance, when in 1990, mm-hmm. In our precinct in Orange County, there was two members of the Communist Party registered, and one member of the Democratic Party registered, and hundreds of us registered as Republicans. And that's flipped in the 30 mm-hmm. years since we left. And we could see that coming. Yeah. And believe it or not, moving to the Democratic People's Republic of Maryland was an upgrade in any way you can imagine.
You know,
but Maryland now is about like Maryland now is about like Southern California was in 1990, and I can see it on the same trajectory. You know, but there are things I do miss about living in California, particularly Southern California. I miss sitting on the deck with a gin and tonic with limes from the backyard.
Oh yeah. You know, we have a Myers lemon in a pot right now.
Mm-hmm.
Here.
Yeah.
We had one outside our front door. We harvested 40 pounds off it 1 year in San Jose, but we're going to have a new tree here. We're going to be careful and plant it carefully and with lots of good soil and give it a good chance. Yep. Because, well, this is not citrus country.
No, it isn't. You're just a little bit too far north of the Florida line there.
Speaking of Southern California.
Yeah. There was a civil mm-hmm. rights victory in L.A.
L.A.
Yes.
Yes. I had a post up linking to a report in the Washington Free Beacon. The city of Los Angeles has been ordered to pay a six-figure award to the National Rifle Association because of, get ready for it, a violation of the NRA's First Amendment rights. You see, the city passed a thing requiring contractors to identify themselves as being with any affiliation with the NRA with the intention of punishing them because the city literally went on record as saying they were opposed to the sorts of things that the NRA stood for and therefore wanted to suppress the NRA's ability to have influence in the community. And believe it or not, a federal judge said, gee, that sounds like content-based discrimination, and ruled that the city couldn't do that anymore. The city agreed to get rid of their ordinance. And the court said, fine, pay the lawyer's fees for the NRA. So it's like $150,000 a check that the city of LA is going to have to cut to NRA. Of course, the way things are going on city
finance,
I was just saying, the way the city is finances are going, the NRA better cash the thing check real quick. In other civil rights news, in this case, a state court, the state Supreme Court of Michigan, has struck down Governor Whitner's emergency powers. And so that's going to be interesting. The governor is saying, well, I don't have to give up for 21 days because apparently she has 21 days to ask for a rehearing by the state court. But the thing is, the reason the state court was taking it up is because a federal court, U.S. District Court, had another lawsuit pending, and they asked the state court to define what the state law was in the matter. And having done that, basically, there's a whole bunch of lawsuits that are now going to. Well, the governor's going to lose big time, but she's saying she's going to find other ways to keep all of her lockdowns and other things in place. So it's just another example of what happens when you let a tyrant go crazy. But
well, she also is borrowing from Jackson. She's borrowing from Jackson. The Jackson has, as Jackson said, the court has made its ruling. Let the court enforce it.
Actually, he never quite said that, but and that was reported as something that he, you know, was said that he said.
That was the gist of it.
About 20 years later. But yeah, it's mm-hmm. it's the same sort of thing. Of course, the other hand, I'm not sure which way the state police would come down on that one. So, you know,
me neither.
might be interesting. We have all sorts of norms being violated. Of course, the Democrats. And the press, but I repeat myself, the Democrats and the press are in full hand-wringing mode because Cocaine Mitch is following the established procedures of the Senate and actual precedent by and somehow that's violating norms. Actually, I checked. It did turn out that Norm was available for comment. And he just wanted another beer.
Oh, man. Okay. That is just yeah you have to know something about 1980s TV to get that joke. So
well, most people have mm-hmm. they've seen the reruns on YouTube. Meanwhile, speaking of the Daily Signal, they had a post up listing some of the leftists who have falsely claimed to be biologically black. And the whole bunch of them strike me as a bunch of opportunistic jokes.
Oh, by the way, the Daily Signal is distinct from the Daily Wire.
Yes.
Okay, that's Ben. Mm-hmm. Ben Shapiro is the Daily Wire. Daily Signal is the Heritage Foundation.
Yes. And but meanwhile, in other news, apparently sometime this past week, Joe Biden claimed to be an alumnus of Delaware State University, which is an historically black school. And of course, they said, never heard of
London.
Him. Yeah. Meanwhile, Amy Coney Barrett is being attacked because she adopted two Haitian children. And for those of you who are still into the 80s, Navin Johnson was unavailable for comment.
Navin Johnson, yeah. If you remember, he was born a poor black child in Mississippi.
That's played by, that was
Steve
Martin's first starring role in a movie.
Yeah, and it was a very silly movie, but it was also had some great, why are they angry at these cans? Okay, that's the psycho gunman.
Before we get into incompetence and incontinence, let's get into capitalism.
Oh, I've always been very much into capitalism. I believe what my good friend John Hogue is trying to tell you is that if you will go to theothermccain.com, which is where I blog, near the top of the center column, you will find a yellow button with the word donate on it. If you will click the yellow button, it will take you to my PayPal account where you can contribute to the support of the blog and, of course, to the podcast. You know, last week I had just put up part one of the Breonna Taylor story. This week, I kind of got distracted what with all the actual news happening. And so tomorrow, I will try to finish. I've already started working on part two of the real Breonna Taylor, because what the public has been told about that case is such a distortion of the actual record. And
you're threatening to do real journalism.
Yes. And so folks who have hit the tip jar, they're going to get their money's worth. And mm-hmm. and so So hopefully by this time tomorrow, I'll have something up on the real Breonna Taylor story. But like I said, if you will go to the page and hit the yellow button, this will be some encouragement to me. Meanwhile, over at my good friend John Hoag's blog, Hoagwash.com.
I don't have a yellow button. I have over in the sidebar on the right a tip jar. And if you click on that icon, it will take you off to my PayPal account. And you can contribute to the support of Hoagwash. I'll be very thankful for that. Or you can scroll down on the sidebar and click on that picture of a hat. And it will take you off to the Hoagwash store where you can buy all sorts of trinkets with markings on them associated with the blog. Or you can do your Amazon shopping through any one of the many bloggers who participate in the Amazon Associates Program. That includes us, both Stacy and me. But it also includes lots of other bloggers around the blogosphere. And that's a great way to support a blogger. You, when you use those links, you pay the same price, but the blogger gets a small commission that helps support our blogging. So that brings us to the recitation of the five most important words in the English language, which we have Diana with us to help.
The five most important words in the English language are hit the freaking tip jar.
Amen.
Hey, by the way, I just noticed something, John. You were wrong.
Hmm?
Vanderbilt is not playing at LSU.
Oh, it's
LSU is playing in Nashville.
Ah.
And they kick off shortly. So you know, maybe some home field advantage can help Vandy against number 20 ranked LSU. You know, LSU got beat by Mississippi State last week.
Yeah.
And so LSU is going to come in angry as all hell. You will not like LSU when they're angry. I pity the Commodores. Or as we sometimes call them, the commode oars.
Well, look, let me put it to you like this. When I was a freshman in 1965, we played Alabama for homecoming.
Oh, my God.
And Bear Bryant left his third string defense on during the fourth quarter to try to let us get on the board. And we still lost 42-0.
Oh, dear. It's so sad.
The only team we beat that year was Army.
Oh, well, anyways, yeah, the Army had the Army was having a bad time in the 1960s, what with Vietnam and losing to Vanderbilt. I don't know if Vietnam is worse than losing to Vanderbilt.
One of the things that was different from every other SEC team in when Vanderbilt back in the 60s is we didn't, because Peabody College, which was a premier teacher's school, was literally across the street. Vanderbilt didn't have a Department of Education or anything. So there were no phys ed majors until they merged with Peabody. So now they have phys ed majors, and that's really
helps recruiting a little bit.
Yes.
Well, meanwhile,
speaking of incompetence,
the headline on my, post leading up to the debate, this week's debate, was Biden incompetent and incontinent, which was about Biden's handlers have asked for multiple breaks during the debate, we were told. And I was like, allegedly, you know. And anyways, that was a very interesting experience at the debate. The whole thing.
Yeah, well, it was kind of interesting. I was watching the thing, and I was really kind of surprised about the first, I don't know, 6 or 7 minutes of the debate. It went real well. I mean, There was an exchange by the the moderator and the president, and another exchange between the moderator and Biden. And both times they got all the way through. There were no interruptions. Things were actually kind of polite and civil. And I'm going, whoa, this is not what I expected. And then on the next
it was Trump's turn.
Yeah, Trump was and Biden started interrupting.
Three times.
And it's interesting. Biden started the interruptions, but it was Biden who said, shut up, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it just, most people would not take Donald Trump and put him on a pedestal as this is just sterling example. This is the role model for presidential behavior.
Yeah, civility.
But, or lots of other ways. I mean, there's some things that are great about his behavior that are great in terms of leadership. The lack of respect shown by Biden to the office of the presidency by saying what he said. Well, I'm not a Biden supporter anyway, so, you know.
Yeah, well, it was, the one, there were a few interesting things, you know, because it was a disaster for, I could barely stand to watch it, honestly. But one of the things that was pointed out, first of all, Frank Luntz had a focus group.
Mm-hmm.
And he said for the first time, right? Okay, for the first time, he found that among the undecided voters, this debate actually made them not want to vote. Okay.
Well, so, you know, I was telling.
And so if the aim was to turn off the undecided and the uncommitted and to turn it into a base election, Trump succeeded. Another thing I saw was an analysis by Dan Bongino. Mm-hmm. And Dan Bongino said that Trump knew going in that Wallace was going to just let Biden run rampant, right? Okay. And that Biden would get to just lecture him and have his preset talking points and everything like that. And so he was deliberately disruptive, okay,
But he was smart and let Biden pull the disruption trigger first.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know, you know, but the point is that Bully Boy Act that Trump did, it seems to have actually, there was a poll out yesterday that showed that Trump had gained 3 points since last week.
Well, there's the other thing is that the Telemundo survey of Hispanics who had watched it was like 2-1 in favor of Trump, who won the debate. And I don't know that's how they're going to vote, but at least they thought he won the debate. Yeah, but here's the interesting thing. You know, I've been we've been talking about the difference in yard signs and flags and that sort of stuff as I drive over here. And I'm driving through rural portions of mid-Atlantic states, plural, to get here. And like the first week I started counting, it was 8-1 and for Trump, 9-1 for Trump. Last week it was something like 15-2 for Trump. Today it was 32-8 Trump to Biden yard signs. Okay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those are in places that normally are at least purple.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be a weird night on November 3rd,
well,
into the morning of the 4th.
You know, first the debate, what happened in the debate upset everything. And then there was this COVID thing, which is another, you know, wild card in the deck. And so, you know, I am not optimistic, but then again,
I'm not either. I think that we have a real problem with theft coming up in the election. I had a post that went up actually just after midnight on Wednesday about it, as I was, you know, looking at my phone, getting ready to go to bed. And I looked and, oh, I have a message of, you know, that I didn't look at. And I look and it says, "Hi, Thelma, this is important. You will soon receive your ballot in the mail. Complete your ballot, pack it in the smaller secrecy envelope, seal it, then put it in the ballot return envelope. Your vote will only count if you use both envelopes. Sign it and date it, seal it and deliver it to a mail or drop box. Thanks. Track your ballot," and it had an address to track the ballot at vote.pa.
Right. Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that's Pennsylvania.
Well, I think that was phishing. I hope you didn't click that link.
Well, that's a good link. That's the Secretary of State's office in Pennsylvania to track that, to track returned ballots. So,
Don't live in Pennsylvania.
B, my name ain't Thelma.
Yeah.
C, the phone number that sent me that message is in Flint, Michigan.
Weird. You know, I have been.
But there's nothing to see here. Move along.
Yeah, right. I have been getting text messages from the Biden campaign for North Carolina. Now, why would they think that I live in North Carolina? I believe it's because my son, who is in the Army, was, until a couple of years ago, stationed at Fort Bragg.
And his name is?
The Junior. Right. Yes. And so I think that they have, but I'm like, I just can't understand.
Well, you're getting all the emails from the Green Party and all the other crazies as well, aren't you?
Oh my goodness. It's just, you know, the thing is, keep calm and vote Trump. That's what I tell everybody. Or if you don't vote Trump or whatever, but
and then after
stop
the election,
listening to the drama. Okay, all of this drama, this daily, this the most important election in your lifetime. Vote, okay? But you cannot do much more as an individual. You cannot do much more than vote.
You can go vote on November 3rd, okay? And then on November 4th, you can follow my advice to keep calm and carry.
Yeah. Well, whatever happens, you know, I saw a post by Jim Garrity at the at National Review that was just a bunch of Debbie Downer stuff. And that was.
But it's not like there is no election fraud going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of which, yes, Ilhan Omar has been implicated in election fraud.
But this is Project Veritas that did it. But if you'll remember, Ollie Alexander and Laura Loomer were both on this story for the 2018 election.
Right, right. The Stop the Steal campaign, where they were trying to steal the governorship of Florida. Andrew Gillum, who has since been...
But specifically on Omar as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and they've done lots of investigative work on Ilhan Omar. But a ballot harvesting racket in Democrat Representative Ilhan Omar's Minneapolis district, where paid workers illegally gather absentee ballots from elderly Somali immigrants, appears to have been busted by undercover news organization Project Veritas. One alleged ballot harvester, Liban Mohammed, the brother of Minneapolis City Council member Jamal Osman, is shown in a bombshell Snapchat video rifling through piles of ballots strewn across the dashboard of his car. And they've got him boasting that he's got 300 ballots in his car. You know, and this ballot harvesting thing is something that the Democrats are planning to do.
No, it's not planning, they're executing.
They are absolutely doing it. Yes, even as we speak.
Although six courts this week ruled in six different states that they're shutting down pretty much a lot of the harvesting activity.
Yeah, and this is just, I had a post on my blog today about a Florida man who was charged with vote fraud. And the media tells you this never happens. A 62-year-old Bradenton man who says he wanted to test the system has been arrested on a voter fraud charge after he tried to obtain a mail-in ballot for his late wife. Okay. His wife had been dead for 2 years. So he apparently forged her signature on a mail-in ballot request. And this got caught by the election board officials. And so apparently, it's going on. Some of these people are actually getting caught.
Well, you know, my late wife, one of the last things she did before she died was to vote for Donald Trump for president. Now that she's died, though, I am sure that she was born in Cook County, Illinois. So I'm sure that she'll be voting for a Biden this year.
Yeah, right. You know, Chicago, Election Day in Chicago is Resurrection Day. It's where the dead walk the earth, and they always walk directly to the polls. And the dead vote Democrat.
My brother-in-law, literally, at one point, one place who used to live in Chicago, and at one point in the precinct, he was the only registered Republican. And they would literally close down the polling after he voted on primary day.
Yeah. Speaking of polls.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that. Before we get to that, I had a post up basically saying that I'm really not worried about Joe Biden. But the prospect of President Kamala Harris troubles me. So I've got a feature that's running at Hogwash these days, and I'll be kicking it off week by week. This one, the poll that's up now will end on Thursday. But right now it is, who will be sworn in as president on the 20th of January next year? And right now, Trump has 89% of the vote, and Harris has 9%, and Joe's got 1. So that's the expectation. I wonder if I have a slightly skewed readership politically. That might be what's going on. Mm-hmm. But still, it's interesting. More people are expecting Harris would be sworn in than Biden, who are voting, expecting a Democrat to take the oath. And that's what's scary to me. I actually think that Harris should not be debating Pence. She should be debating Trump. And I'd almost pay to watch that one.
Hmm.
Meanwhile, you know, it's not like there was no fraud associated or evilness associated with the last election. Did you watch any of Comey's testimony this week?
No, I tried to avoid that. Yes.
It was almost as difficult to watch as that thing in front of the hospital this morning. It was just amazing. But during his testimony,
I don't recall. Doesn't ring a bell. My God, that man.
Well,
Who is it who calls him a looming doofus, Kurt Schlichter?
Yeah. Well, President Nixon, who was in fact a lawyer, was advising his staff members to have bad memories back in 1974. So there you go. But during the testimony before the Senate committee, he was repeatedly saying that, you know, things were done properly. He literally said that the FBI investigation of the 2016 Trump campaign was, quote, by the book. Now, you know, that's not a lie if you're citing the correct book. And I am assuming he's talking about one that was published by Sector and Warburg in London in 1949. by George Orwell, 1984. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's just... I hope Durham is bringing things to a head quickly. But it's not going to make much difference if the wrong people get in, because they'll just shut down the Justice Department. They'll null pros all the indictments. That means choose not to process, prosecute.
And speaking of crime.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's not like we have had an increase in street crime, is it?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, it came out just today, by the way. It was reported that New York City has already equaled its number of homicides for the entire year of 2019. In other words, after 9 months into the year with 3 months left to go, they're already past last year's, which had been the highest in recent years.
Yeah, well, and where's the shock value in that one?
Well, I mean, Governor de Blasio.
I'm sorry, but I left my shocked face at home, and I'm obviously not needing it tonight.
Yeah, but yes. Anyways, there was a video came out this week on Friday, a surveillance video showing the actor Rick Moranis. And if you know Rick Moranis from Second City TV, he was on Ghostbusters and starred especially in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. And the
favorite role, though, is in Spaceballs as Dark Helmet.
yes, he did play in Spaceballs. But he's an actor and comedian. And you know, several years ago, Rick Moranis walked away from his Hollywood career because his wife died and he wanted to take care of their two young children. Well, anyways, this surveillance video came out showing him just being punched in the head on the streets of New York. Now, you know, guy just walks up behind him and punches him in the head. And this happened Thursday. And it was a few blocks from the Central Park West. It was on the Upper West Side. I'm going to hang on a second here and see if I can find the actual address. But this is a neighborhood, a very affluent neighborhood.
Boy, howdy. I mean, you're basically in the same part of town as Columbia University.
Right. Well, the other thing, well, anyways, but they have moved a bunch of homeless. Bill de Blasio has moved a bunch of homeless people who are mentally ill, drug addicts, sex offenders, and what all, into this neighborhood, and is becoming very scary. Well, Jim Treacher at Pajama Media immediately recognized what had happened to Rick Moranis as the Knockout Gang. Now, for about going on 10 years now, there have been increasing number of incidents of this and caught on video, often posted to social media by the perpetrators, okay, the videos of these crimes, where the idea is to just, and it's black teenagers usually, just walking up behind a white person and hitting them in the head as hard as you can to try to knock them out. Okay, that's the object of the game. And by the way, Jews are being, in New York, Jews are being targeted by this, especially Hasidic Jews.
Well, yes, people who are easily identifiable because of their dress.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Anyways, and so this has been going on, but the media will tell you that it's Jim Treacher quotes, provides link to the media calling it a phony panic or a myth of this knockout game, but it's mm-hmm. it is happened often enough, and I talk about this. And New York Post columnist Kyle Smith provided some recent examples of crimes like this. What happened to Rick Moranis in New York, and said, this is Bill de Blasio's New York. The worst people are emboldened by this regime. And I compared it.
But, I mean, we've reached a kind of insanity when New York has a mayor that makes Bloomberg look good.
Oh, God. Yeah,
He's starting to make Dinkins look good.
He makes David Dinkins, It may be impossible to be a worse mayor than David Dinkins.
No, I think
De Blasio's given him a run for the money.
No, I think De Blasio's achieved that.
Yeah. A disaster, De Blasio. Well, anyways, but I talked about how you've got to see what's happening here in the context of this Black Lives Matter propaganda, which tells us that, black people are victims of systemic racism, and all white people are just guilty of this horrible hate and everything else, and it reminded me of radio genocide. Folks, if you don't know what happened in Rwanda in the early 1990s, there was something called, I can't pronounce the French name, but its abbreviation was RTLM, which was a Rwandan radio station that broadcast Hutu propaganda. Okay, it was the Hutu majority that attacked the Tutsi minority in the Rwandan genocide. And this months and months and months of broadcasting this hate propaganda created an atmosphere of charged racial hostility that allowed the genocide to occur. And I'm saying this is what the media is doing in amplifying the Black Lives Matter message, is because it is this one-sided hatred, this attempting to demonize white people, and it will lead to bad places. Okay, because we know that it's not true. I quote Heather McDonald, who has done such great research on this, is that if you look at the actual reported rates of interracial violence, okay, it is the exact opposite of what Black Lives Matter would
have you
believe.
Well, you have a graph of latest Bureau of Justice statistics, which is part of the Department of Justice related to actually the data is gathered by the FBI. And basically, this is for 2018, is the most recent figures. Black on white crime, 547,948.
white on black.
White on black crime, 59,778. So basically 10 to 1.
Yeah, yeah. And,
but if you stop and think about it, there are a whole lot more black people. So if you then adjust
there's
that,
more
white folks than black folks. So if you adjust it the other way, it winds up being like 25 to 1.
And my point is that if racial hate was distributed equally between black and white, then you would expect there to be, based on the percentage of the population, you would expect there to be about 4.8 hate crimes. You would expect whites to commit about 4.8 hate crimes for every hate crime committed by blacks. But as you said, it's 10 to 1 the opposite. And so this distortion of the reality in the media, you know, people, what it is, there are a lot of people in the media have this idea that if they were to report the truth, it would, everybody would suddenly become racist, okay? And that there would be atrocities or something like that. But if the truth, you've got to report the truth, whatever the truth is. Whoever it hurts, whoever it helps, whoever, you know, but the media wants to act as public relations agents.
But here's what you need to think about that's really dangerous. 50 years ago, it wasn't that skewed.
No.
There's something that's happened. We fought the war on poverty, and what's been defeated is the black family.
Yes.
And that has been disastrous for young black men. But obviously, you know, our betters brought us all that effort. And
one of the things they did is they turned the crazy people loose.
But crazy people are dangerous, Stacey.
Right, right, right. You know, folks, every week we close the show by reminding you that crazy people are dangerous. And this week I featured on the site a young man named Mitch Taibel. That's T-A-E-B-E-L. Mitch Taibel is a very handsome man. As a matter of fact, he actually tried to become an actor and model, but he's crazy. And he's so crazy that a couple of years ago, one of the things I do just to, for my own entertainment, okay, is to watch police chase videos on YouTube. Because if you pay too much attention to politics, you will go crazy. But anyways, I was watching YouTube of a 2018 chase from Arizona, which went for 60 miles and ended up in Tempe, near the campus of Arizona State University. And you're watching it. If you just start it and watching it, you have no idea how it ends. And then what had happened is that the cops had deployed undercover cars to try to box him in, but somehow he rammed his way out of the trap and just took off running, on this main street. And then he went head on into a minivan. And I mean, you saw this crash happen at high speed and you were wondering, could anyone survive this? Well, Mitch Taibel walked away unscathed. The woman suffered injuries, but they were not life threatening, as he had a broken hand and other injuries. But anyways, it turns out that he is a quote-unquote sovereign citizen. Now, if you don't know what sovereign citizen means, it's a sort of crackpot fringe of people who
This is to the point where I almost feel like I ought to start fading up the Twilight Zone theme rather than ours.
Yeah. Well, anyways, they don't recognize American law. They think that they are somehow exempt from the law, that the law is invalid, and that as sovereign citizens, they can do whatever they want. And
sovereign citizen itself is an oxymoron. A sovereign isn't a citizen. A citizen, never
mind. Right. Anyways, but they're the citizen kings of the world. And it's just craziness. And the history of that movement is interesting. But surveys conducted a few years ago found that law enforcement believes that terrorism from the sovereign citizen movement is higher than the risk from any other group. Well, anyways, so this guy calls 911 during his car chase to say, "I'm not stopping. There's a criminal conspiracy amongst the police to stop people without probable cause." And then he had a jailhouse press conference and he said, "It's absolutely legal to resist arrest with force to the extent of taking an officer's life as necessary." And he has filed billion-dollar lawsuits pro se. Folks, if you're filing billion-dollar lawsuits pro se, the word for you is crazy.
And crazy people are dangerous, apparently to themselves as well as others.
And speaking of high-speed travel.
Yes, we're getting ready to get out of here. By the way, speaking of the interesting stuff.
Quick.
Allegedly interesting stuff. It's 2nd and 10 on the LSU 15 with LSU in possession. Nothing
next
to nothing.
Week, folks, Saturday night, 7 o'clock, the other podcast.
And we'll see you then. Thanks for joining us, Diana. Good night, folks.
Night. Mr. Breeze.